This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
We're excited! Let's go, baby!
Welcome back, everybody, to the NVM show. I'm Titus, the usual, and today I've got on Mark Henley, Vice President of Advocacy for the California Waterfowl. Thanks, Mark, for joining on the show today.
Thank you for having me on. It's always fun to come on here, and I love watching your videos. I think it's great for not only, a lot of hardcore hunters definitely enjoy those things, but just new people kind of wanting to learn how to hunt. I mean, they can glean a lot from what you're doing out there. So it's definitely a great service you're providing.
I appreciate that.
And also love watching your dog Rocky retrieve, man. That thing's a monster.
Yeah, in the physical too. 95 pounds, my goodness.
Things Brute horse squad.
Knock you over if you're not careful.
Oh, he did yesterday. I was doing something in my garage, and he decided he wanted through between me and a little space. He about knocked me over. I mean, he just took off running right through there. I'm like, hey, dude, pay attention to what you're doing. I think he thinks he's a little pup still, and he's not. But he'll be high
drive male dog for you.
Yeah. Yeah, he does have drive. It's funny because I've had him in some places to where the water's really shallow. And he gets it, right? He can turn the afterburners on. But the problem why everyone thinks, oh, he's not that fast or he's not a hard driver is because everything we hunt in is either over his head or it's up to his neck. So, I mean, he can only go so fast, you know. But Rocky has the nose of a bloodhound. That is for sure. That is I'm thankful for sure. But anyway, so let's...
The element.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That really is, especially in... environments that we hunt in here in California a lot. It's crucial.
Exactly. Same thing on the refuges, man. If you don't have a dog with a good nose, it's going to be so difficult.
Oh, yeah.
With 10-foot tall old growth tulies that they got to go through to find those birds. Yeah.
Yep. And there's a lot of shots. If you're trying to be make kind of extra ethical, there's just a lot of shots you're not going to take.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. They're efficient too, having a dog, right?
Yep.
Finding your birds, getting out of there a little sooner.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they pay dividends. I mean, every good duck hunter has a good dog.
So, Mark, I gotta ask you. This is a random question that's not even started of the topic, but someone asked me, kind of jokingly, the other day I had him on a podcast, and he said, "Define to me a tule." He's from like the North Midwest area. He's like, all I ever hear you California boys talking about tules. So I want to hear what you would define a tule as, Mark.
Well, it's certainly not a cattail, although it kind of looks like one, right? But no, Thule's, they have those little air pockets and they can float and they're, you know, circular, and they're, when they're, when they are irrigated, they're green, and when they're not, they're brown. But they're so buoyant because of those little air pockets. Apparently the Native Americans used to make boats out of those damn things. And wow, they are that buoyant that, you know, you can actually make a little craft to boat around in. And to me, they're the best cover to hide in too. I mean, all my camo is kind of that same color, and it helps me for like blending in and just hunting out in heavy cover like that. You know, to me, it adds another whole element to the hunt. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have a lot of flooded timber around here. Can't really get into that, but we have these really tall tules in certain areas, and hunting a nice private tule pond where you got those things surrounding you. Mm-hmm. That's just a great way to hunt. But again, I mean, as you guys were saying earlier, you got to have a good dog when you're in that kind of cover, or they'll just never find the bird. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hunting with a good dog is key in those areas.
Yeah. The amount of birds lost pretty much went to nil.
Mm-hmm.
Once Rocky, I got Rocky, and it was like his, he was beginning his second year. His nose just, it blew me away. Right. And I, you know, and I remember seeing a guy out in the marsh several years ago, old guy with an old dog. And one of my birds went, he was a little bit of a backdoor in us hunting. So, but he's an older guy, and he didn't cause no issues with us, but the bird fell behind us, and he's like, "Hey, I'll bring my dog over there." I'm like, "Sure, yeah, thank you." So anyways, he brought him over. He goes, "Well, he'll find him. We're not going nowhere until he gets him, because he will." And I'm thinking in my head, before I had a dog, right?
Yeah.
I'm just like, they're really going to find. And sure enough, you mm-hmm. know, boy, that was just like a message to me, you know, so.
And think also about all the time that dog saves you. I mean, you can get back in the blind that much quicker yep. and be hunting. So there's all this missed opportunity that would occur while you were looking for that bird
yep.
if you didn't have the dog. So I'll bet you your harvest goes up considerably just for that fact alone.
True.
Right.
Yep. So yeah.
Exactly.
They're just a great tool. Yeah.
Yep. A lot of factors that seem rather benign, but they pay dividends, right? Yep. Like they, you don't really haul. Think about, yeah, like yep. Mark said, you know, like time spent away from the blind. If you know, sometimes you don't even have to get out of the blind, right? Your
right.
dog's exactly. going to get it, and you can yep. stay there and maybe get another opportunity,
right?
You know, or
it's huge.
Know, not have to get out and, you know, cause some issues because you got birds coming in, right? Yeah. So yeah, it's.
I try not to be that annoying dog guy, but it's like, I'm just telling you, as a guy that's went from no dog for 20 or maybe 18, 19 years to a guy that's had one for the last five.
Now you can't do anything without it.
I'm just saying I am.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just yeah. saying, you know, I'm spreading the news. Like,
oh, yeah.
It just adds another level of being ethical. Like, I shouldn't say it like that, but it just.
There's a portion of it that's kind of ethical.
I can say it is, yeah.
Yeah.
But.
Because you're not like not wanting waste, right? But
right.
You're almost going to kill or retrieve everything you shoot.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know what I've done, Kevin? I've tracked Rocky. We lost, let's see here. And I'm talking about just me and whoever hunts with me, right? Mm-hmm. With Rocky. I actually lost two last year. The year before that, I didn't lose a single bird. And I don't even.
That's amazing.
I feel that is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And some people don't believe it. They're like, "Are you lying? Are you?" I'm like, "No, I'm telling you."
Yeah. Why would I make that up?
I know. Why would I? I'm tracking this, but I also started last year. I started tracking, and I really didn't do too good in January. So I don't have the exact number, but I also track birds that fell in like the tules or somewhere that I could not get to, that I wouldn't have, that Rocky retrieved.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah.
And so you start adding that number up. That's a whole nother.
A lot of things, man. You can count them yeah. up on two hands, all the efficiencies or
yep.
things that come out of having a dog.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, let's get into why you're here today. There's a lot of topics. I'd say let's start out with some of the new deals with the gun. Well, there's two here that we've been talking about kind of through the text and everything, Mark. And
yeah.
Let's. Why don't we just go ahead and dig into maybe starting with the tax with the new. I'm sorry. Not
yeah.
You want to start with that one first?
Sure. I mean, that's one that's been around for a long time. As you guys know, it's almost every year now we have to battle this thing. But it's a proposal to place an 11% tax on all ammunition and pretty much all firearms. And so essentially that would raise the total taxes. If this thing passed, that you would pay on those items would be almost at 30% if you include all the other state and local taxes. So, I mean, it's almost like taxing ammo and guns out of existence. I mean, at some point you're going to have people just say, I'm not willing to pay that price.
But,
of course, the funding for this, rather than supporting conservation, which is the Pittman Robertson, you know, model that we have, that's been very successful and helped a lot of our species recover and helped our state wildlife areas here with their operations and maintenance. This funding, unfortunately, would just go for violence prevention type programs, which, you know, to me is kind of an insult because it implies then that we're part of the gun violence problem.
Right.
And or, you know, irresponsible use of firearms when nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, as you guys all know, you got to take a hunter safety class, got to pass a test, and you know, our record speaks for itself. There's very few accidents in any given year. And having a hunter injure or kill a non-hunter is almost unheard of. It hasn't happened in 30 or 40 years in the state. So it's just basically an insult for us to have to pay this tax. I guess the one good thing is because it is a tax, constitutionally it's required then to to meet a two-thirds vote requirement on the floors. So once it gets to that point, I think we have a better chance of killing it. And that's where it died last year, was I believe on the Senate floor. So hopefully we can do that again this year. We'll be putting CWA will a voter voice alert out to our members, so all of your followers can weigh in if they want. That's always really helpful. You know, for me to go in and lobby a legislator and say, don't vote for this bill is one thing. But when they hear from people that live in their own district, that makes a lot more of an impact. So hopefully people will take advantage of that opportunity. And
is that something you can relay to me to get something out like that? To
absolutely. Yeah. You know, email it to you. And if you have an email list that you can fire it out on, or just post it on your social media, that would be great.
Yeah. And put it on
really
here.
Really help out.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that would be great.
Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off, but I wanted to make sure I can get that from you to help.
Yeah.
Get the voices. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The more people, you know, having their friends and their members chime in, the better. I mean, that really does make a difference down at the Capitol. And I was just going to say the other day, this bill, it was up in here, a hearing the other day. And I mean, this is the number of bills they go through in each hearing. It literally was the last bill to be heard. And I sat there for 7 damn hours waiting for this thing to come up. They had to get through like 35 other bills. But that just also shows how active things are at the state capitol. And again, we've talked about this before, how just everything now in this state is regulated. And you really, if you don't have representation down at that capitol, you're going to have your interests just bulldozed over. So it's really, really important for, you know, lobbyists and other folks that represent your interests to be down there watching what's going on, because there's just a whole lot of effort to crack down on not only guns and hunting, but a whole host of other activities that you probably enjoy.
Right. Hey, Mark, was that the navigable water bill that you waited the 7 hours? Was that the one?
No.
No?
That's another one we're working on. I'll get into that here in a little bit. But let me just quickly say the other couple of gun bills that we were working on. There was a bill that would require gun liability insurance for all gun owners. And I mean, it would be expensive to obtain this, you know, so to us, it would just be another disincentive for people to hunt. I mean, how do you go tell a new hunter who's gone through hunter safety, passed the test, you know, told, well, you got to go out and buy all this gear for duck hunting, buy your shells, everything else. And then on top of it, say, by the way, you also have to get liability insurance for your firearm.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people are just going to say, screw it, I'll go take up golf. You know, it's just too many requirements to hunt. And so these are the kind of bills that really we need to focus in on and make sure that they, die an ugly death, because just more, the last thing we need are more requirements and restrictions on hunting. We already got plenty. We don't need more.
How do you stomp this to where it stops resurfacing its ugly head? I mean, is that even, that's probably not even doable, huh?
No, that's tough because anybody in the legislature can reintroduce this bill. Even if you wear out the author, you know, on it, you know, some other of the 120 legislators down there then may pick it up. So these things tend to keep popping back up, and eventually, you know, they have a greater chance of passing. Now, the good thing on this particular bill is SB8. It was made into a 2-year bill. There was no vote taken in the hearing on it, and so it won't be heard again until January of next year. So at least we got this one bottled up for this year. So that was good.
What companies would even insure a gun? Like, how are for liability insurance? I mean, who do you even go to?
That's a great question. I believe actually that the NRA has some policies that they offer, believe it or not.
Makes sense.
And then there is some home insurance that does, not all, but some that do cover firearms. But other than that, it's just unheard of. And no other state requires this. Yeah. So this would be a first in the United States. For a state to now say, by the way, in order to exercise your Second Amendment, you have to now go, you know, your rights, you got to go now get insurance. So it just obviously doesn't fit in really well with our constitutional protections. Nobody should have to get insurance to enjoy their freedoms and rights. Right. So we're just going to stay opposed to this, and hopefully at some point it'll just go away.
Right. And not to mention our duck hunting sport, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty small group of folks, right? It's never been the mainstream sport in the country, right? Hunting wise, even so, I mean, man, to put even more restriction on an already small base, right? I mean, it's like nobody knew, you know, it's already hard enough to get folks to come in that have family members in the sport, right? It's not just for everybody, right? And then to add more to it, man, it's almost like you're never going to get waterfowl.
Waterfowl hunting in particular, you're right, is one of the hardest because the regulations are so complicated. They change every year. The cost for duck hunting is very high. I mean, there's so much equipment that you have to acquire. And then on top of it, if you're a public area hunter, you got to deal with the massive crowds and the access issue. I mean, it's just, you got long lines to get into those refuges, and just getting on and hunting on a given day can be very difficult. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of roadblocks, you know, in front of you, and then adding another one, that's just, you know, in my view, going to kill hunter recruitment. So we got to finally fix this thing and make sure it doesn't come back again. Another bill real quickly that we did have that would affect a lot of hunting related nonprofit groups was SB 368. And what this would have done would have banned the raffling of handguns. And so, as you guys know, when you go to events, I mean, now you have a lot of raffling or auctioning of handguns as a way to raise money for the nonprofit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this bill would have taken that tool away. So fortunately, we worked with some of our friends in the state capitol, got some other hunting groups involved, and the author agreed to remove that provision. So that bill was fixed. So that was some good news.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great news.
Every now and then, some good things happen down at Capitol. Yeah. Not very often, but once in a blue moon, there are some positives.
It worked.
That was one. Yeah.
How'd you get involved in doing what you do, Mark? I know I said we were going to go through kind of the background history, but we never really talked about that when you've been on here. Like, what made you, I mean, obviously you love to waterfowl hunt. So, I mean, was that love for duck hunting what drove you to get this involved and do what you do? I mean, what all took place there?
Definitely. I mean, that's the kind of passion that keeps me going. Is as bad as things get around, you know, the state capitol and depressing it can be at times. I mean, my love of hunting and definitely keeps me going. But, you know, just educationally, I mean, I got a BA in political science, and then I went and got a master's in government. And so just getting that educational background was important. But prior to working at CWA, I also worked in the legislature as a consultant and as an aide. So that having that experience then really allowed me, once I went out and lobbied, to be more knowledgeable and effective. And that's really helped me in my career. So, yeah, I would, you know, recommend anybody wanting to get involved, you know, in the political system or become a lobbyist, try to get some kind of internship down at the state capitol and kind of get your feet wet down there. That just being around the capitol and seeing how things work, that kind of knowledge and experience will really help you then in your career. So it's been invaluable for me.
Yeah. How are you staying up on all the new stuff? Because, I mean, are they trying to sneak stuff in through other things? Like, does that ever happen with these kind of bills like this? You know, I don't know. I'm asking as a complete novice on this.
Oh, yeah.
But do they ever?
Yeah. I mean, they can gut in a mill and amend another bill at any time during the session or try to sneak amendments in. And so, you know, our sessions kind of start in January and they wrap up typically in September. But the whole way through, you have to watch every bill very closely to make sure it's not going to be amended and then all of a sudden, you know, voted on the floor and then passed on to the governor. And they can literally do this within the space of just a couple days. Like, if they really want to get a certain bill passed, they can kind of streamline it and have a quick set of votes and get it to the governor's office in a very short period of time. So if you're not paying attention, if you're asleep at the wheel, you're really going to lose out. So yeah, we got to watch this stuff day in and day out.
So what do you do now when you say asleep at the wheel? Are you talking about just being actually at the Capitol when this stuff is getting conversated? Like, how do you butt in and say, hey, I got something to say about this. Is that how it works? Like, you're there and you're standing up. Are you given a space of time? Like, how does that all work? Where you get to fight for it?
Yeah, you definitely want to be down at the Capitol just so you can also talk to other staff and learn from them what's going on. You can glean a lot of information that way. We also have a computer system. You know, the Assembly and the Senate have a database of all the bills. And so every day you can go on that system and look at what changes were made to various bills.
Okay.
And if there's a hearing that's going to be coming up. So when I see that the hearing is scheduled, then I make sure that day I'm totally free. I go down to the Capitol. And like I said, sometimes I got to wait 7 hours before the damn bill comes up. But you got to make sure you say your piece. And what also that people don't see is prior to doing that, you go around to each office that is on that committee, each member's office, and lobby that bill and tell them why it's a good or a bad idea. So there's all this other stuff that goes on prior to that, you know, the public may not see, but is critical and determining whether the bill gets out of committee or not. We also, with every bill that we work on, if we take a position, we do an actual position paper on it, a support or opposition letter that we send to the legislature and copy to the governor's office. So they know in writing what our position is. And you can always see like the different support and opposition for each bill. If you go on the website for the Assembly or the Senate, they'll show you on each bill who the supporters are and who the opposition is. So if you ever want to verify, you know, what groups are on each bill, you can do that just over the internet.
So you're spending some serious time reading and studying and sitting in sessions. I mean, that's a full-time deal.
Yeah. Yeah. No, luckily I'm more than happy to do that. I mean, that's what they pay me for. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, at times it can get pretty dry and boring. But again, you look at the stakes. I mean, anybody could go down there and try to take away a certain type of hunting or ban hunting entirely. So again, if we're asleep at the wheel, the consequences could be massive. So I just got to make sure that we check things day to day and that we're always down at that capital ready to go in case a hearing comes up.
We appreciate what you do. That's huge.
Yeah, it's like we appreciate your service.
Yeah, that's a notable, needed, beyond what I can even say thank you for. So we're glad for what you knew and what you're standing for.
I'm happy to do it.
Advocating for us, that's a must.
You got to fight for your right.
Yeah.
To duck hunt.
Little Beastie Boy action. You know? I like it.
Yeah. So is there any other bills, anything else that we could know about or got to keep on the radar?
So Kevin mentioned this navigable waters bill we're working on. So this is a bill CWA is sponsoring. And so, I mean, you guys know about navigable waters. Kevin, of course, is big with his boat and takes advantage of them at every opportunity and does a great job, obviously.
Thank you.
I'm watching the photos and the videos you send me.
Right. Yeah.
Doing it. So really
Titus now, Titus
kind of flooded hunting can be.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Titus got to take advantage of that a lot this year as well. You know, recently got his boat. So. Worked out well for him.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I know we're going to try to do a couple 45-minute sessions, and just depending, we definitely don't rush through anything, so feel free to stay, you know, on whatever topic you, and give us as much information as possible, because we have a lot of topics, but we also don't want to blow through anything, because this one really has my attention, because over the years of navigable water, I've had all these different things I've been told, I feel like, by game wardens, by what I've thought, by what I've heard other hunters say. I really want to know the ins and outs of it, even for the listeners as well. But also, and obviously this is for California, because I know it's different in other states, but I want to hear the ins and outs of just really what's legal and what's right, and then anything that you want to add on top of that that's maybe new or being talked about.
And you're right. It is different in California because we have the most liberal navigable water rule in the entire country. It's more liberal than the federal rule. Mm-hmm. And I'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, the big thing with navigable waters, I think, too, it's just such a critical, important part of our waterfowling heritage here. I mean, before there were duck clubs and when we had no dams, levees or other flood control, you know, that's the kind of hunting that took place in the Central Valley and even up into the Klamath Basin. So really, it was how duck hunting started in California. And it's, you know, again, just a key part of our heritage. And so for that reason alone, I think we got to fight to protect it and make sure that it continues, even though our society, you know, maybe modernizing and probably think that this is a relic from some other age. So what the bill then would do, it does a couple things. And by the way, bill number, I think I mentioned it's AB 859. Assemblymember Gallagher, who represents the Sacramento Valley.
Can you say that again? I'm sorry. You said AB?
AB 859, Assembly Bill 859. Okay. And our author is Assemblymember James Gallagher. He represents the Sacramento Valley. He's a rice farmer himself, and he's a avid duck hunter. We've gone out many times and duck hunted together. He totally gets it. But he's also the minority leader on the Republican side. So he is the leader of the Republicans within the state assembly. Just a great guy. And so one thing I just want to note is, you know, when you're running these bills, it's so important to get authors who not only have some sway like Mr. Gallagher does, but also believe in the issue and really understand the issue and will fight for it. So we're really fortunate that we have him on board and that he's running this for us.
Okay.
So it's nice to have somebody like that in your corner.
For sure.
But anyway, the bill, it would do a couple things. It would, first of all, make it a right rather than a privilege to hunt navigable waters. And what this is, in terms of it being a right, that has already been stated in several state attorney generals' opinions on navigable waters. But it was never put into the Fish and Game Code. So what we're going to do is finally clarify that hunting is a right on navigable waters in the Fish and Game Code. Everywhere else in the Fish and Game Code, when they talk about hunting, it's just a mere privilege. So this would be finally one type of hunting that is an actual right under state law.
Can I ask you something there? What would be the advantage of one be from a privilege to a right?
Some people would say that's just semantics, but when it comes to the courts are very sensitive to any infringement on what they consider rights. So if something like this ever did get into a court process, if hunting was just considered a privilege, then they would probably say, you know, more restrictions can be put on it, and it's not really a protected use. But if it's considered a right, they will be more likely to say, you know what, this restriction on hunting has to be stricken down, and that we have to do everything we can to protect it, because personal liberties and rights are, you know, again, have these constitutional protections for them. That creates a higher standard if you're going to try to regulate them.
Okay. Now. Okay. Thank you. I was just curious.
And so as you guys know too, I mean, we still also have these local entities that are out there that want to ban hunting on navigable waters. So I mean, most recently I've had to deal with the city of Benicia. They want to ban hunting in the Carpina Strait and all around the navigable waters all around them. But, you know, this crops up also in the San Francisco Bay, Tamales Bay, Morro Bay. And so, you know, there's definite efforts in certain parts of the state to get rid of navigable water hunting. So it's just something to be aware of. I think, you know, with this bill, that will help to provide a little more protection maybe than against those types of efforts. But the other thing that the bill would do is, as you guys know too, a big part of navigable water hunting is when rivers flood and bypasses flood, right? And you get these overflow conditions. Unfortunately, right now under the Fish and Game Code, if you hunt navigable floodwaters and they are posted, that is considered trespassing. Mm. So what this bill would do, it would clarify that no, that is not trespassing, and that the hunter has a right to use those areas regardless of signage or anything else.
So the bill, let me try to word this properly. So you would get in trouble right now
if you got out of your boat, right, Mark, on those properties? Or could you still float?
Well, even if you're in the boat, you could get cited.
If there's signage.
If there's signage.
Correct. Now, the wardens, state fish and game wardens, do not enforce this, is my understanding. It's more of a problem with like local sheriffs, local police, or regional park district folks who don't know of the attorney general's opinions that say that that provision is unconstitutional. And so what will happen is a hunter, and this happens quite often, a hunter will be cited by those people, and then they have to go through the entire court system and they have to pay, you know, it costs them a lot of money. You know, that violation, by the way, is prosecutable as a misdemeanor. Mm. So that's nothing to sneeze at. It's not just an infraction. And you know, it also costs the court system a lot of time and money. So what we're trying to just do with this bill is say, nope, the attorney general has several times said that this provision of the Fish and Game Code is unconstitutional as it relates to navigable floodwaters. It's still constitutional as it relates to land or to non-navigable waters. And we are also clarifying that in the bill. But if it's navigable, under our system, you have the right to hunt it from a boat. And you know, we want to make sure that people aren't getting these tickets and having to go through that process. So,
and that's what
this will help to avoid all of that in the future if we're able to get it signed into law.
Okay. Cause that's kind of what I'm trying to ask. It sounds like a redundant question, but it's almost like you're allowed to do that right now. But the problem is the local entities don't understand that. So you're having to deal with all the hassle of all that. You're going to get out of it probably, correct? You just got to deal with the time, the money.
Every time we have given the attorney general's opinions to hunters that have been cited and they've given it to the judge, it's been thrown out. Mm-hmm. I have never seen one of these tickets stick, not a single one.
Okay,
but if but again, they need the right information. If they don't have that information, they're probably are going to, end up penalizing the hunter.
So passing this bill would hope to mitigate that issue, I guess, of getting ticketed.
It would get rid of the issue entirely. Yeah, the other issue too is there's a lot of landowners that see that provision in the Fish and Game Code right now, and then assume that, you know, that it's illegal for the hunters to be out there when it's not. And so they go and harass the hunters, and then the hunters essentially get intimidated out of exercising
exercising their rights.
You know, it will also then prevent, you know, I think to a large degree, that happening again in the future once, you know, the law is made known, once we get this thing passed.
Yeah, and that's going to take time, right? Because do you think, let's say if it passes this year, which is that even an option?
It's on a good, progress right now. It's on consent on the assembly floor. It should be voted off in the next couple of weeks, and then it'll go over to the Senate. The Senate always has a different take on, you know, bills that the assembly does, but at least we're, you know, almost halfway there now through the process. So it is getting some support.
So where's the hang up though? If we know this is our constitutional right, and I'm glad this bill's coming in, I'm praying that it passes and support every way I can. But if it's already a constitutional right and the federal guys know it and the attorney general, why is the local entities, is it just their lack of knowledge in it? And my second part to that question would be, if this does pass and it goes into effect, is it going to take a couple years before all these guys figure that out and the information's dispersed to them, like the sheriffs and the police departments, to say, hey, you can't be, you know, giving these guys grief no more?
Yeah, no, it'll take some time. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, the key problem is the Fish and Game Code still, you know, states that if you hunt on navigable floodwaters and you do it where there's signs that are posted saying that you can't, that is a violation. And so it's just something that needs to be cleaned up. It's been on the books since 1982.
Wow.
And even though the attorney general has said it's invalid, nobody ever went back and actually cleaned up the code. And so that's what this bill would do, is clean up the code.
Better late than never.
exactly. And it just, again, will avoid a lot of confusion and provide much needed clarity, you know, in the law. So it'll be a positive thing. But I want to also say that this is not something that CWA came up with on its own. This is something that is totally based off of what the state attorney general has said in studying the Constitution, in studying the law, in studying the court cases. And so that's all we're trying to do here, is take what is in these opinions and put it into the actual code. So in our view, it's really just a technical clarifying change.
But a huge one.
But one that makes a difference. Sure.
Yeah, that's a huge deal. So to just dig in the weeds a little bit more here, so navigable, can you define that for everybody? Because I think we can all assume different things, but can you define that a little deeper? And if that's too broad, I can kind of throw some stuff out there. But
it's a pretty simple definition, actually. It's navigability is determined of whether you can float it with a boat. And that boat could be a large boat. It could be a kayak. It could be a raft. If you can float it, you have the ability to hunt and fish it. That is how liberal our California constitutional provision is as it relates to navigable water.
And it has to be from a public standard. Access, right? like, obviously.
Yeah, so there are sideboards on this. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, you cannot walk across private land and then launch to get to the navigable waterway. Mm-hmm. That's trespassing. You would have to launch from a public access point, say, you know, a dock or where a highway and a river intersect. I mean, there's people that will launch from those areas. Mm-hmm. There's also places where we have state wildlife areas that have rivers or refuges are there, and a river runs through that. If you got on the river from the refuge or the wildlife area and then floated down, then you'd be legal too, because you'd be accessing it from a legal standpoint.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, because actually that's something.
Are you thinking of the San Joaquin?
Well, I'm just thinking in tons of situations, because there's a lot, like you said, there is all throughout the state, there's those situations where it runs through. But I've heard from other people, and I'm not going to say the source, but I would think they're a pretty reliable source, that because they'll be posted too. I've seen that with the floodwaters. There'll be postings of where these refuges are, right? You're not allowed to be
on a refuge, even if it is flooded,
right? What are you saying? You can.
What I'm looking at it from, I guess, more is on a river system that's navigable. Like
you could be in the river, like
correct?
Even if it runs through,
you could stay in the river exactly and float down through private property, but because you're still in your boat, you're legal.
Gotcha.
But yeah, you're right. You can't just hunt on refuges when they are flooded and closed and do that. And that part of the reason that really relates to federal refuges, and there's a federal preemption issue there. That's why you can't go, say, on Sutter Refuge and hunt it. Under our system of fish and game laws too, the Fish and Game Commission, it has constitutional authority as well. So it can then put limitations on where you can hunt on navigable waters. And it has put those limitations on our state wildlife areas. So that's why if Little Dry Creek floods, you can't go out and hunt it. Mm-hmm. If Yolo Wildlife Area floods, you can't go out and hunt it, because the commission has voted and designated that area as a wildlife area. And therefore, you know, it's partly under their control. And so that's why you can't, just when a refuge is closed, even if it's flooded, you can't go out there and do that.
Yeah, copy. Yeah, and that makes complete sense. I mean, that's, you got to give those birds a break. Well, I mean, it's like every 7 years before it even floods anyway, so it's such a small window of time.
And Yolo in particular, I mean, that's an ocean out there.
Yeah, right.
Right, if that floods, it's like, where would be a good spot to hunt out on that?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's an ocean. There's very little cover out there.
That's good to know. And the definition sounds, and it's like you said, it's simple once it's explained, but when you don't have someone that knows what they're talking about tell you, then you could go a thousand different ways.
And that happens a lot.
And it happens all the time. That's what I'm saying. I've had all these different, this is what it means. And it's the high water mark and this and that. And it's like, well, hold on a second. So Mark, when it floods and you're on a river system and it goes over into the private, which is by constitutional, mm-hmm. we're allowed, but you cannot step out of your boat on that land, right? You still have to be in the boat.
I've never seen court cases that have looked specifically at that, but I would say it's wise to stay in your boat, mm-hmm. because the navigational easement is tied to the boat. And once you leave that boat, then you're really not navigating. Mm, and so, you really do need to stay in your boat and stay floated. Yep.
I'm surprised and that's actually never
you
came
also,
up.
You also, you know, then too, can't get out of your boat and drag your boat into another area and walk mm-hmm. across just to get to another flooded area. Mm-hmm. That's another thing people try to do. Technically, I believe that is trespassing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Which
definitely
makes sense.
If you're out doing this, stay in your boat.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned too, you know, the normal high water mark. So that the normal high water mark then is not a flood water issue. It's more of for regular rivers and bays. What is the normal high water mark, and how high can you hunt up into those areas? And so, you know, it's pretty easy. If you, you know, float down the Sacramento River, you can see the vegetation line where the high water mark is. So as long as you can get out of your boat there and you can get out on a gravel bar and walk around and stay in the river, as long as you don't go above that vegetation water mark, then you're fine. And then, you know, down in the bay, there's the tidewater area where you can see where the dirt stops and the vegetation begins. That would be the high water mark, say, around San Francisco Bay or even in the Sassoon Marsh. So those are the standards.
I don't really want to get off the, I think we've got a lot of questions answered on the navigable water, but I kind of want to, hopefully this don't get us too off track from that, but I'm sure you've heard of Onyx, correct? The hunt maps.
Yeah.
How much, I don't know if you use it. Okay. I don't know if you use them or not, but I know one thing is I am very skeptical on what I trust on that. I mean, I think there's a lot of good things about it, and I know that the lines are pretty good from what I've heard. I've talked to some game wardens, but what's your thoughts and opinions on that as far as maybe navigable waters, which we already kind of know what that is now, so that's, it's kind of its own thing. But sometimes you'll see property lines come out into it, maybe like a little island or whatever. I mean, how trusting are you of that app, and how do you feel about Onyx?
And I don't use it. Okay. I do know about it. When I have had people out with me that do use it, it always seems like it gets something wrong. So I wouldn't trust stuff like that. And I mean, as it relates to this issue, you know, we get huge floodwaters, it actually changes the courses of streams, and high water marks are changed, and you know, the conditions change year to year. I don't know how Onyx is going to help you really with that issue.
Yeah, true.
So from my perspective, it's always best to, and this is again what the law says, is you know, you need to look at the current conditions in the waterway. You know, what the high water mark is visually, and whether, again, you can float it with a boat or not. And Onyx, you know, is not going to really be able to help you with those.
Yeah.
It's probably always safe to, you know, look at Onyx, but then go to that local government or publication, right? And just back it up with more. So,
for sure. Is there anything else we could cover or talk about for navigable water?
I want to mention we have a great coalition of other hunting and some fishing groups that are supporting the bill. So I really appreciate that. I mean, there's no way one organization can try to, you know, do anything down at the Capitol. You got to have partners. And so that's really, you know, great that they've helped with this bill.
Strength in
numbers.
And
then, it's just, like I said, it still needs to go through the Senate and then be signed into law. So it's got a long way to go before we'd get this thing finalized, but we just think it's an important issue. Again, it's to try to protect part of our waterfowling heritage, and you know, anything time we can do that and also get hunting clarified more as a right rather than a privilege, I think it's an important opportunity. So hopefully we get it through.
Well, I think I'm kind of thinking, let me see here. I want to try to keep this in the right proper order because we have a lot of other topics. I'm trying to see if this might be a place to cut the first episode and roll into the second. But then again, we have some long, I feel like some long topics. We do want to talk about Tule Lake, Klamath, some water issues, the salmon. We also want to talk about we did the navigable water, the youth vet hunt dates. And I wonder if we should cover one more. Should we end this one, Kevin? What do you think? And start another one? Because
Maybe start another.
I think so. Yeah. I think this is a good point to cut this off and start a part two. So, guys, everybody listening, we're going to be continue recording, but we are going to end this episode. I appreciate everybody for listening in, and I will keep you guys updated, and I'll be in touch with Mark and Kevin, and we'll be talking about this stuff as far as where we can let our voice be heard and be part of maybe making those phone calls or sending those emails or letters or putting in the votes, whatever it is that we got to do our part. I will definitely keep you guys informed. I think, to me, the podcast is one of the greatest things. You guys that listen to this are super involved. And so I want to say thank you for that and everybody for listening. And we'll see you guys on the next one.